Good evening. Go ahead, Ray.
Okay. There we go. My name is Ray Miles, and I'm the president of both Broadway and Sassy's. And when it comes to this topic and process, I feel like I'm in an episode of The Twilight Zone, that despite all evidence and testimony to the contrary, despite an abysmal track record in other cities, we're about to enter into a trust-based relationship with Uber. The most astonishing aspects of this relationship are that the city is going to trust Uber to do their own background checks. In Houston this month, an Uber driver was a convicted felon, was arrested for raping a female passenger. Houston's criminal record background checks detected numerous crimes by prospective Uber drivers, ranging from aggravated robbery to driving on a suspended license. Uber argues the city process takes too long, but if taking a little extra time on vetting drivers prevents even one sexual assault, isn't it worth it? And Houston isn't the only market with issues. The state of California is suing Uber for misleading passengers about their background checks, which gives passengers a false sense of safety. The city is also going to trust Uber to provide promised data so that transportation issues can be studied. This is despite ongoing battles in New York and Boston, where Uber has refused to provide data or has been accused of providing incomplete or inaccurate data. Uber is also going to be allowed to provide less insurance than the city has required for decades of the private for hire transportation business. This seems patently unfair and not in the best interest of citizens. On the topic, the city maintains it does not have enough data to properly analyze the situation. None of the truly alarming issues, which I consider to be insurance and background checks, are affected by the pending data requests. These are public policy issues that have not been adequately addressed. And on the topic of accessible service, I would note the city has not asked the cab companies for data. If you had, I could have told you that in March 2015, Broadway Cab's average response time in the city of Portland was 14.3 minutes. During that same period, the average response for a wheelchair-accessible trip was 23.4 minutes. Not perfect, but also nowhere near the catastrophic numbers that have been tossed around. And you're probably wondering why I haven't provided this information earlier, and I would say to you that I've tried. I've emailed information to both Commissioner Novick's office and the task force, but it's never clear whether or not that information gets through. I think in both instances, it gets lost in a stack of paperwork. You see, there is a big difference between throwing information into the stacks of information and being given a seat at the table. And it has been abundantly clear that while there were no seats at the task force table, Uber has had a direct line into City Hall. I am not resisting change to the industry. As I've said before, I do believe the time has come for Portland to embrace unbranded taxis. But we need to do it right without undue harm to the taxi drivers. Portland has one chance to get it right, and this is it. And when you start negotiating with $40 billion out-of-state corporations at night, it stops being about good public policy and starts being about corporate greed. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Kadir Wako from Union Cab. I've been a cab driver since 1998, and I'm still driving part-time. There is just a few things I want to say that are unfair. I've been present a few times. One, about camera. The camera is that's not only for the safety of the drivers, it's the safety of the public and the safety of your children. If one of your children, your daughter or son, get ride into Uber and a stranger like a Denver, Colorado, who gave a ride to the lady to the airport and drove her at the airport and they went back and robbed her home, nobody tracked that person. So that's not only for the safety of the driver also. It's not fair when cab drivers going to cab companies going to pay $920 per camera and a $40 billion capital company doesn't require a camera. It's about the driver permit. Driver permit or for cab drivers pay $100 a year per drivers. And that also displayed on the where the public can see so they can identify who is the driver. If the life or of the customer is at risk, they know that who's the driver, even they can change it. In addition to the cab companies, they do have the number displayed on the vehicle and also the color of the cab company. In addition to that, you identify the drivers, who is the driver, including his first name and last name, and actually another the CD numbers. Middle rating, and this is going to make the city in jeopardy. There is no any way, as a cab driver for 17 years, I might know about the matter if I want to manipulate very well. The reason I'm saying this is, a cab drivers who, you, if you give them green light today, the elderly woman who tried to get a ride from Fredmeyer to her home for $5 is going to be ripped off what they call it a price gauge, like Uber. Cab companies are going to do that. Cab drivers is going to charge old lady with a $5 maybe soda, charged by cab drivers $100. That is going to be another question on the public, not only of cab company or cab drivers issue only. It's the public issue also. I'm still asking Meyer Hill, I fought to get 4 years to get a 50-50 permit. Thanks to Sam Adam, please don't take it away from me. I want to feed my kid. I have outstanding kids who is going to graduate this year and going to live in Clark next year as a law. One day, she will be one of you guys. Please, be fair. Let's do fair. We want to compete. We don't have an issue over not to enter to the city. We just want to be fair. Let them play the same rules. The same rules should apply. Let them get $500,000 insurance. We want to do it. Please, let's be fair. That's how justice will work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gedjo, can you tell me what's the take-home pay average of your drivers?
Our drivers, it depends on the cab company, what do you pay. And the rate is it's also what you work. It's not only what you work. It's also what you pay to the company. It depends on the kitty. But according to this plan, the driver is going to go home for nothing. They're not going to take home because a cab business is not like a Fredmeyer or Safeway. A cab business is the driver has to make money, pay for the gas, and then pay for the car payment, and then pay to the company. Then what they take home is after that. And
let me just interrupt you, though. When you were forming Union Cab, it was because of that challenge.
Our cab drivers are making better rate at this time.
For Union Cab, about how much are they taking home?
They're taking home at least maybe $60 to $85 after all expense.
Per day or per week?
Yeah.
$85. Okay, thank you.
Are they classified as employees or independent contractors?
They are the owner of the company, and they are independent contractors, too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening.
Hi. My name is Steve Entler. I'm the general manager of Radio Cab, Oregon's finest driver-owned company since 1946. The Innovation Task Force has made numerous recommendations to City Council in an effort to allow TNC's entry into the City of Portland market and also recommend changes to the existing vehicle-for-hire code so that the TNCs are not allowed an unfair advantage over the existing taxi companies. After reviewing the proposed regulatory changes that will be in place for the 120-day test period, I feel that the fairness goal is falling well short of its intended mark. The number of inequities is almost too many to list here, but I will point out a few that I have quickly noticed. Permit fees for taxi companies, vehicles, and drivers is disproportionately higher than what is being charged to the TNC companies. Each TNC will be charged a flat fee of $20,000 for the 120-day period. This fee will be inclusive of an unlimited number of vehicles and driver permits that may or may not be reported by the company. Radio Cab and its drivers will pay roughly three times that amount during that same period of time by a combination of a company fee, vehicle fees, driver permit fees, and vehicle change fees. The driver permitting process for TNCs will be much easier and quicker than the process for obtaining a taxi driver permit. TNC drivers apply directly with their company, and then the company simply reports to the city that the driver is qualified and has fulfilled the city requirements. Taxi drivers are required to apply for a permit directly with the city, exactly as they were doing before, eventually getting the permit issued by the city, and they pay the fees directly and individually to the city, same as before. The only revisions made to the ordinance involve the process for driver skills training. Everything else remains essentially unchanged, or at least as far as I can discern from the proposed code. I believe firmly that the process for permitting taxi drivers is proper and should be the proper process for permitting TNC drivers as well. Driver permitting should be handled by the City of Portland, period, not by a TNC company. If a TNC driver that has been approved by his company assaults a passenger, will a corporate executive from San Francisco serve prison time as a substitute for the driver that he vouched for? I kind of doubt it. TNCs will be required to submit aggregate and anonymized data to the city focused on transportation, accessibility, and service to help the city improve access to the for hire transportation. Examples of relevant data may include the following: type of ride requested, whether it's wheelchair or not, trip origin zip code, trip destination zip code, identification of every request that is unfulfilled. Taxi companies are being required to enter into an agreement with the city to provide the same thing. This puts taxi companies at a disadvantage because of the numerous types of dispatching and trip initiations. Taxi companies don't usually track those items in that matter, whereas it is easy for a TNC to extract those items in that form from their app. Since all data is anonymized, there will be no way to verify accuracy of the contact, nor will there be any reward to be gained by any company for accurate data reporting. The civil penalty schedule lists fines for 1640-450B through E, log entries. I assume this means data entry. 1640-450F, log availability. I assume this means data availability. And there is no penalty for inaccuracies or omissions. I believe that the code revisions have also inadvertently affected another part of the for-hire industry. 1640-450B actually deals with limousine and executive sedan requirements. It requires information on every trip, not aggregate and not anonymous.
Okay, we'll get the staff to review this.
It requires customer name and passenger name, date and time of initial reservation, date and start times of trips, initial and destination addresses, and the fare amount paid. These are penalties. There are penalties involved with accurate, detailed submission of trip data by these companies, but not TNCs or taxi companies. That seems very unfair. Maybe the code revisions need a little more work. Maybe they have been rushed a little too much. Thank you very much.
Make sure that you get those to Ken while we're here, if you could, just so he could review those code sections.
Can I say one quick thing? I did hear late this afternoon that what may have occurred in Houston was a result of the code language saying no conviction within 10 years, and that that language should be changed. There's legal terms for it, but no convictions in 10 years or whenever they were recently incarcerated. So it needs to be 10 years beyond any incarceration time, and that should, if you wanted to entertain changes, that should be cleaned up.
Okay, thank
does
you.
That make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
We'll check that. Thank you. Okay, next three.
Are Brooke Steger, Stephen Kafori, and Kelly Amico, and they'll be followed by Darren Campbell, Megan Schrader, and Ron Norrie.
Okay, Ms. Steger, I think you're first.
Brooke, you're my guest.
Sure. Thank you so much. So my name is Brooke Steger. I'm the general manager for this region at Uber. First of all, thank you, Mayor Hales, and thank you to the commission for looking into this issue. I know it is very complex and that there have been lots of questions. So we thank you deeply for the amount of time and energy that you've spent on this. And we also thank the task force for the amazing amount of time that a citizen-driven task force has put into uncovering and digging into issues such as TNCs and the for-hire industry here in Portland. At Uber, we support reasonable regulations that are focused on safety, background checks, vehicle inspections, and insurance. And I believe that the core of these recommendations put forth in front of you today encompass that. And we are a huge supporter of safety, and we are very deeply committed to following the regulations that are put forth. And so I want you to know that this is very important to us, and we will work very closely with the City of Portland to make sure that we are following this and addressing any concerns that are out there. We are strongly opposed to the amendment that was proposed today on insurance. This is something that both the task force looked into deeply, that city staff has also looked into. And the insurance proposed has actually been passed by numerous states across the country. It just came out of the House in Washington State last week, and we expect this to go into law into Washington State, and we also hope that Oregon State will follow the same insurance recommendations, but we do not want to hold this up any longer. And we believe, and so do a lot of other states in this country, believe that those insurance requirements are 100% sufficient. As you've seen over the last few days and over the last months, we've been blown away by the amount of public support that has been voiced for TNCs in the city of Portland. Last year, there was over 12,500 people that voiced their support. In the last couple of days, we had a new petition where almost 5,000 people have signed that. We also know that there have been hundreds of emails and people reaching out to you in support of options like this. So we're blown away by the amount of support that we've seen from Portland as a whole and the residents here. We've also seen the hospitality industry and the restaurant industry reach out and support. And yesterday, the leaders in the technology community also reached out in support of ride-sharing services here, which we were very, very pleased about. But more importantly, we're floored by the support of the drivers that we partner with here, that we will partner with here in Portland. We think that it's extremely important for the city to offer this opportunity to them, a flexible opportunity, the ability to go back to school while also driving on a platform like Uber. And it's very, very important to them. And I think, as you see here, a lot of them are here today and want you to bring this opportunity to them and bring safe and reliable rides to their city. So thank you very much for all of your commitment, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you very much.
Brooke, I just have one question.
First.
So you're here representing Uber. So you heard the dialogue, the exchange earlier about what happens if a driver doesn't meet the certification requirements. So we learned that a driver doesn't have the insurance, the car isn't inspected, doesn't have a business license, or all of the requirements that you are going to certify. Is Uber prepared to commit that driver will be barred from the platform until those deficiencies are corrected?
So from the insurance, we will carry a primary policy for period one and periods two and three. That policy will be turned over to the city and can be reviewed by risk management. So there is absolutely no time that a driver that is on the platform will not have insurance. So you can always verify that there will be. We also like to verify that they have personal insurance. However, there will always be insurance, and you guys will be able to verify that real time. Vehicle inspections and background checks 100% before a driver can come onto the platform. That vehicle has to be inspected, and we have to have that vehicle inspection on file, and same with the background check. Those are done on an annual basis by default, and there is absolutely no way that a driver is coming onto the platform. With business licenses, we really see that as a relationship between the private business and the city of Portland. However, we have been discussing this at length with the city of Portland and are committed to ensuring that drivers will have business licenses on the platform.
And so just to that point, if the city notifies you that a driver does not have a business license, will you take the driver off the platform?
I think that's something that we can work on with the city, yes.
Folks, please. I've said it a couple of times.
Mr. Steger, I think that's pretty important.
I didn't realize that was a squishy. That sounds like an erosion of what was represented to us earlier. So at some point, we're going to have to get a clarification, because the expectation of this council is that if you're notified that a driver doesn't have a business license, they will not have access to the platform.
And I think it will be our responsibility to follow whatever, if that is in the recommendations that are in the agreement that's formed, then we will have to comply with that.
You said that you'd like to check that a driver has private insurance. Is that not part of your verification?
We do take on the insurance, the individual policy of the driver. However, I just wanted to reiterate the fact that when a driver is on the platform, they will always have insurance via our insurance policy.
But you do ask that you require that they provide you with a copy of their valid vehicle insurance.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Next.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Stephen Kafuri. I represent the Transportation Fairness Alliance. I have a very simple message for this evening, and that is do it right the first time. Although this is billed as a pilot project, you're actually making many final decisions here. You will not have a second chance to clean up mistakes for many years. I say this based on the history of many American cities which deregulated their for-hire transportation services and much later re-regulated them but suffered during the meantime. Do not deceive yourselves that in the next couple of months you will be gathering data and then making final decisions based on that data. In the proposal right now, you're making all the final decisions. There's nothing but details left to fill in. Once you allow TNCs what they want, you cannot later go back and restrict them. It's trite to say it, but once the genie is out of the bottle, you can't put it back in. Your experience with Airbnb should be a good lesson for you here. 94% noncompliance and a belated attempt later to go after these people with a company that cannot be reined in after it once is allowed in. Uber came to Portland illegally, and it seemed the only way to stop them was to promise Uber to review its regulations and modify them so that they could operate here legally. Of course, Commissioner Novick had already planned to review the taxi regulations after he received the Transportation Bureau, but there's no question that the timing and the urgency was driven by this promise to Uber. Now, Uber has a lot of nice folks here, and I know they've got a great PR outfit, and you know that when they get 10,000 people to sign petitions, that doesn't happen by accident. But I think you're very much aware also that Uber has a corporate culture that resists any government regulation. Their illegal entry into Portland is not an anomaly. Cities from Braintree, Massachusetts, to Eugene, Oregon, have sued Uber for illegally operating in their cities. Uber is under fire for breaking rules all over the globe. If you have any questions about that, take 5 minutes and Google Uber regulation issues, and you'll have more than you can read the rest of the day. Keep this in mind as you go through these proposals. I'm going to analyze a few of them for two issues, public safety versus Uber convenience. First, allowing Uber all by itself to certify compliance for permitting its vehicles. Portland has always tried to guarantee public safety by having the city staff certify vehicles and required inspections. Why are we lowering this standard? Because Uber thinks it's more convenient. Now, let's take a look. What is the record of Uber's self-certification? In just one recent example, the mayor of Houston this month complained to Uber in a letter, quote, the city of Houston enforcement personnel reported that during routine enforcement activities around the city, they frequently encountered Uber drivers operating on the Uber platform who were not licensed by the city. She said this is not acceptable and creates a substantial risk to the safety of the riding public. An analysis of Uber vehicles, all of which were self-certified by Uber, found 2,000 cars in the city of Houston were out of compliance. Next is a major gimme to Uber that shows again how its insistence on self-serving convenience wins over public safety. In this proposal, Uber will be allowed to serve self-certify driver background checks. Has anyone checked the record of Uber's background checks? Ask the District Attorney of San Francisco, who is suing Uber over the issue of incomplete background checks. The mayor of Houston recently gave Uber a couple days to clean up his act after an Uber driver who had passed its self-certification background check raped a passenger. The city then conducted its own background check and discovered many drivers with prior convictions, including many serious offenses. To quote from the city report, despite assurances from TNCs that commercial background companies conduct criminal background checks at least comparable to the ones run by municipalities, in fact, these background checks are incomplete. And what was Uber's response? You might think they would have said, oh, you're right, our background checks have some holes in them. We should go through the city process. You would be wrong. Instead, Uber complained that the city process was too time-consuming and too cumbersome for the drivers. In fact, Uber then went to the Texas legislature asking it to prohibit Texas cities from enacting strict legislation on their own. Luckily, that bill failed last week. However, similar legislation has passed in other states. Just recently, Idaho, after Boise, kicked Uber out. And the state legislature in Idaho said, no, you can't have more strict regulation than we have.
Stephen, I want to ask you to wrap up soon. I will submit that, if you will, in addition.
I'm going to read it, if I may, Mr. Mayor. I'll be quick.
Okay, please.
A quick check of the background, we'll find out that there are many ways that drivers can beat Uber's background check process. Check this yourself. The other major issue is insurance. We've already talked about the level of insurance. I won't go over that. But it's totally outrageous to cater to the desires of a $40 billion company that places at risk the lives and limbs of passengers to innocent third-party parties, then refuses to pay for adequate insurance. The question here, besides the inadequacy of the amount of insurance during phase one, is who actually has the obligation to purchase this insurance? Now, you've heard it said Uber is going to cover this. Read again what your proposal is. It says in there that either TNCs or the driver or both will have primary insurance. First, how can both have primary insurance? If one or the other has primary insurance, it's not primary. Second, the problem, and you've heard it over and over again, the drivers will have insurance. There is no insurance for drivers. Your own staff told you that at the Innovation Task Force. There is no driver insurance. I just talked to our insurance man just a few minutes ago when somebody said something about this new company that's coming in with whatever they call it, some kind of fancy insurance. That's not going to apply, the excess coverage, I think, something like that. That's not going to apply to individual drivers. That means something that TNCs can buy, but the individual drivers can't. Their commercial insurance, the one you say, we're going to check and see if they have insurance, their own insurance policy, you see, does not cover them when they're driving for Uber. No companies, State Farm, any of those other companies, do not cover the drivers while they're driving for Uber. They can't buy regular commercial insurance. That's like 10 times as much as regular insurance. None of them are these drivers have regular commercial insurance. If you don't require the TNC to have insurance, those people may be uncovered. Maybe, maybe not. We don't know. But it's your job to not guess or hope that people are covered. The citizens of Portland are depending on the city council to protect them. And it's your obligation to ensure that TNCs have coverage by mandating that TNC is going to have coverage. There's no other way to do it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yes, sure.
Hi there, Mayor, members of the council, thank you. My name is Kelly Amico, and I represent the Transportation Fairness Alliance. I'm a PR consultant, and one thing I've learned in my time with this fine group is that every taxi driver has a face, and they have to show that face when they report to duty. Uber drivers in New York drive drunk, so passengers don't have to. It's a pretty big accusation, isn't it? But if you do a little digging on the internet and on Twitter feeds, you'll discover for yourself that there are many, many complaints of Uber drivers driving drunk. According to a random sample study conducted by a New York Observer journalist, details of the incidents are consistent. The drivers are erratic, they speed and swerve, and in some cases, they even reek of alcohol. They never did show up to see a person, a supervisor, as they checked in, did they? In a few cases in which Uber passengers actually issued complaints to Uber, what did the $41 billion company do? It provided these passengers with a $25 credit toward future rides. Good thing the passengers lived to get those vouchers. Interesting, isn't it, that Uber is so proud of its MAD study. Perhaps a little more vetting and supervision of its drivers will actually glean a positive impact on Portland city streets. I urge you, please, to proceed cautiously before allowing hundreds of uninsured, underinsured, unregulated, and unsupervised drivers to hit Portland streets.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, let's take the next three, please.
Our Darren Campbell, Megan Schrader, and Ron Norrie. And then from the individual list, we will go with Wynn Dwyer.
I want to call one more person because we have another TNC represented here. So after we get done with these other groups, I'll call her. Before we get to individuals, I mean, go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
Good afternoon or good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the commission. My name is Darren Campbell. I am the elected private hire driver representative. I serve proudly on the Private Hire Transportation Board of Review. And we are charged with looking at all new companies, requests for new permits for taxi cab increases. Recently, I'm sure you probably are aware that we're sending you three new companies to look at. We've approved over 292 permits, one of which is EcoCab, which is Mr. Norrie's company sitting to my left. Those people all went through an extensive process. And then I can tell you that there's a company called Orange Cab that works in the suburbs. And Orange Cab, I don't have the most recent data, but they have tens of thousands of dollars in fines. They've attempted to request taxi permits in the city of Portland, and our regulatory staff has diligently denied that request. And the reason is because they have acted outside the scope of regulation of the laws of the city of Portland. They have outstanding debt, and they've shown themselves to not be a trustworthy company that's going to follow the rules. Now I look at Uber, and I look at Lyft, and according to the Better Business Bureau, they have F ratings. They have numerous complaints across the, not only across the country, worldwide. There's constant problems with how they do business, how they interact with their drivers, how their drivers interact with the public. And it's countless. Every single day, I get multiple reports of stories from every corner of the globe on something new that has been reported on that an Uber driver or a Lyft driver has done behind the wheel or to a customer or to an innocent bystander, or that Uber has done something denying coverage. The list goes on and on. And my question to you is, why entertain the idea, let alone bend over backwards to try and get Uber and Lyft into this city when they've got such a terrible track record? I'm not saying that all TNCs are bad, and there's definitely room in this city for TNCs, but this group has a proven track record of being absolutely terrible. Thank you.
Can I ask you just one question?
Absolutely.
Because we haven't had a ton of testimony from members of our existing regulatory body that regulates this industry. But we've been told that there has been a reluctance to embrace change and to consider reforms to the industry. So my question is, has the existing regulatory body previously taken up the question of whether we should deregulate the cab industry?
Commissioner Fish, I appreciate. I believe that there's been rumors of those conversations, but I would like to address one thing, and that is when Uber first came to the Private Hire Transportation Board in regards to the one-hour waiting rule and the $50 minimum for town cars, they were greeted with, we are going to take up this with a subcommittee, scheduled subcommittee time, had members of the subcommittee come have a meeting in which Uber did not show up to state their case.
Okay, but I probably did not state my question artfully.
Okay.
Has the board previously been asked to take up the question of whether we should deregulate the industry generally, and have they done some analysis? We have a task force that's done some analysis. We've had council deliberations. But has the board previously taken up the question of whether we should deregulate the industry?
To my knowledge, no.
Another question, if I could follow up. I hadn't heard about this controversy or this problem with Orange Cab. Is that what you called them?
Yes.
Where are they licensed?
They are not.
So they are based somewhere outside of the city of Portland?
They work in the suburbs of Portland.
Okay, but there's no suburb that regulates cabs?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Much like Uber is operating now.
So these drivers could potentially sign on to drive with Uber?
Yes.
So you mentioned that there's a process where you're going to be sending the council approvals for three new cab companies?
Yes.
When is that happening?
I'm not sure when it's going to be on your schedule. However, at our last meeting, which was about 2 weeks ago, we forwarded you Portland Taxi Cab, or Portland Yellow Taxi Cab, Independent Taxi Cab, and Rainbow Taxi Cab for a total of 250 permits requested.
Thank you for your work. Because my understanding is that we're not, Commissioner Novick, proposing any changes to 1640-160, which is issuance of company permits. So I'm just wondering, we're deregulating, but we're not deregulating? I don't really understand that.
It's very confusing to me as well, Commissioner Ferris.
Thank you. Okay, next, go ahead.
Good evening, Mayor Hales and members of the Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Megan Schrader. I'm here both as a resident of Southeast Portland, but also as the executive director of an organization called TechNet here in the Northwest region. TechNet is a 70-plus based member institution or organization of technology companies that promotes the growth of the innovation economy. So there is a plethora of benefits to increasing transportation choices in our city, but I think I'll focus on two that are unique to transportation networking companies. One is the entrepreneurial opportunities that they provide. Portland is lauded around the nation for being a place where people, no matter how quirky their interests may be, can find a place for themselves and can make a life for themselves. And transportation networking companies add another tool in that toolbox for them, whether they may be, you know, artisanal coffee roasters or, microbrewers in their spare time. They could also pick up a few hours here and there of driving for a transportation networking company. So it really provides flexibility that they wouldn't traditionally have, with an alternative like a cab company, because they can work whenever they want for however long they want. And it really adds to that perception of Portland being a city where people can be innovative in how they decide to create economic opportunities for themselves. I'd also say that as Portland focuses on becoming a technology hub and wants to compete with cities like Austin or Boston or Seattle or San Francisco for the small but very rapidly growing pool of software developers and engineers, those types of people want to live in a city where they have options like transportation networking companies. And that's what makes Portland a competitive city for those people to locate in. So I would urge you to support the pilot program. And I would also just like to briefly talk about the amendment that was proposed, which I would be hesitant to pass. As you all know, legislation changes as it goes through the legislative process. And there are discussions currently because of the national insurance compromise, which was created with both major and leading insurance companies, an insurance association, and the transportation networking companies to be a compromise. And that's the language that's in the current underlying proposal. The Oregon legislature, the bills go a little bit farther than that, and there are amendments in discussions now on how that can be brought into the national insurance compromise. So I would be hesitant to move on that, but to please allow this pilot to play out and really see the benefits of transportation networking companies.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Good evening.
Good evening. Ron Canori with EcoCab. Thank you for allowing me to speak, Council. I have a prepared statement, but I'm just going to speak frankly, if that's okay. The first issue that I have with these proposed amendments is pricing. The TNCs are so large, and they have so much money that they can afford to just come in and charge whatever they want, whenever they want to, and it's going to really hurt, the daytime taxi drivers out there. I think currently, what's Uber charging? $1.60 a mile and something like that. So they can really undercut during the day, and then they can surge price at night to make up for it. So I'd like to see if we could an amendment to the proposed changes that offers fair and equitable pricing across the board at a minimum of $2.60 a mile. That way, TNCs and taxis are playing by the same rules. I do agree that by allowing all of these TNCs into the market, that prices should be deregulated, but there should be a minimum. Second point that I'd like to make is that the penalty section for TNCs for non-compliance seems to be pretty weak, in my opinion. These companies have so much money that they'll just laugh at a $1,500 fine. So, given their past track record, I would maybe make the penalty a little higher. And you may want to consider setting up an escrow account of sizable money that the city of Portland and these transportation network companies can share, so that if they don't comply, the city council can make their noncompliance very painful for them from a financial point of view. And I'm talking in the millions of dollars.
Sir, can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
Wouldn't your argument about big companies can undercut small companies apply in any aspect of the marketplace? I mean, Fred Meyer is owned by a big national company. Should we require them to set minimum prices so they don't undercut local grocery stores?
Well, we have choices with which grocery store we go to. When there's only one grocery store to go to, the prices are going to be really expensive.
Well, I would argue, if we were going to go down this path, that since the majority of this council has thought that bringing Walmart into Portland is not a good thing, I would simply say that there are certain kinds of companies, by virtue of their business practices, we don't think fairly compete against our local businesses. And that's why a majority of my colleagues have tried to keep Walmart out of the city. The question I have for you, though, sir, is we've talked a lot about a level playing field, and I know we're all committed to it, but my sense is that your circumstance is different from a lot of other people because you're the last guy in terms of having a company. You played by the rules, and now the action we're about to take during a 120-day period may put you out of business. And when I raised that with someone recently, they said, well, in fairness, Ron knew this was on the horizon. So is that true? Did you incur the kinds of expenses you did, both on the regulatory side, the compliance, and meeting our requirements, knowing that within a matter of months we were likely to change the rules and put you out of business?
Well, first of all, I don't think you're going to put me out of business, and EcoCab's not going to go out of business. I wouldn't be doing this. I wouldn't be here if I thought I was going to.
Change the rules.
However, I just believe that the rules need to be fair, and without a level playing ground for charging, I think it gives a very big out-of-state corporation a lot of power to just come in and charge whatever they want, and I'm simply, there should be some sort of a minimum, because they can just come in and undercut the competition. I'm not worried about my company. I'm worried about price gouging with regards to consumers, and I'm really concerned about the fairness to both entrants, and including the TNC drivers. They make a percentage of whatever's brought in, so I don't see why they would or you would not like to have some sort of a guarantee that they're going to make some sort of a living wage.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We interrupted you. Did you get your points in?
That escrow account, make sure it's nice and sizable for them.
Thank you very much,
Thank you
Ron.
For your time. Thank you.
Before we move to individuals, I do want to call up Annabelle Chang from Lyft because she may have something to say, but I think some council members may have some questions for you, so give you a chance to make a statement if you want, but then I have some questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, good evening again. It's good to be here. My name is Annabelle Chang. I'm the West Coast Public Policy Manager for Lyft. To us, this is all about increasing transportation options for Portland residents. And I'm really humbled to say that over the last week or so, hundreds of emails have poured into your offices, I'm sure. And we've had all of these incredible Portland residents show up here, spending hours of their day to come and talk to you about how much they want this option in their city. And I think that, you know, really speaks to their commitment to being a civic participant and also being able to voice how they feel about policy being made in their own city. So I'm really just very honored and very humbled by the folks that have come here today. You know, Lyft is about community, and it's about connections, and I just think that there's something really exhilarating that we've been able to come up with the technology that uses what we already have, our existing cars, our existing seats, to solve long-standing problems that have sometimes taken billions of dollars to just try to take a chip off. And now it's happening quickly because technology is allowing it to happen. So I just want to make sure that it's very clear that rideshare has many faces. And you can see all the faces here of the folks who are wearing green shirts that say PDX loves ridesharing. The bottom line is that it's about growing the transportation pie. That's what it is. And that's what I hope that, you know, some of our fellow participants in the transportation industry can see. If you look at it through a narrow lens, so, for example, if I were to Google best recipe for a bacon lime cupcake, I'm going to find that. So if you look through things through a narrow lens, you're going to find what you're looking for. So I think some of the things that are being discussed is viewed from a very narrow lens. But if you look at it, if you step back and just say, what does this actually mean for the city of Portland and for the Portland region and possibly for the state of Oregon, is your bottom line increasing transportation options for Portland residents? And not only transportation options, but also economic opportunity. I was really honored to meet someone outside who said he was a musician and an artist and that he wanted to do this on the side. I've been in many lifts where I've met musicians and artists who've actually had their music playing and been like, hey, check it out when you get a chance. And I think that's the magic of what Lyft can do when you connect neighbors together. So I just want to say Lyft is a young and humble company, and we are here to work with you. We want to grow with you. In looking at the TNC permitting process, there is a very big stick. And that big stick is that our permit can be suspended or revoked at any time if we aren't complying. So I just want to make that very clear that we understand that, and we would strive, obviously, to keep that permit active and work with you. So, again, rideshare is about many of its participants, and we want to make sure that to be part of your community.
Thank you. Annabelle, your presentation before the council, in my opinion, has been markedly different from some other people who represented TNCs, partly in how forthcoming you've been and also how quickly you have embraced the suggestions and the proposals that have been presented to you without qualification. And I'm beginning to sense there is a real difference in the marketplace. So, for example, has Lyft operated illegally in the city of Portland?
No, we have not.
And have you been sued by the city of Portland based about any of your business practices?
No, we have not.
And do you intend to allow drivers who are not in compliance with our city code to have access to your platform?
No, we do not.
And do you have any concerns about sharing the data that we're going to request in order for us to do our enforcement, our reasonable enforcement of our code?
And as I had mentioned before, as a lawyer, I will say that there is one caveat that I would add, is that we would obviously want certain items to be under seal. But in other terms, when it's anonymized and aggregated, and allowing for the city to do better transportation planning, better understanding of what this whole climate is about, then certainly absolutely. I think, you know, we've entered into non-disclosure agreements with certain state agencies all across the United States. And part of it is just protecting that proprietary information, but the other types of information that help city planning, help transportation planning, help sustainability planning, absolutely.
And just generally, can you explain to me why, when I did Google your company, there are, in relative terms, so few entries about your company in an adverse position with local governments around the country?
Well, we are a smaller company, so I do want to clarify that. And we are also just national, so that obviously brings down the Google hits. And I do think that without question, our view and our vision has always been, and I am having been a public servant for many years of my life as well, we want to work with you. I know what it's like to be on the other side, although never been elected before, what it means to be able to work with companies and try to get to a resolution. And the key for me as a public servant had always been, what is the greater good for the public? What is the greater good for our constituencies and our residents?
And do we have a commitment from Lyft that if at the end of the 120-day period the city council determines that this is not in the public interest for us to continue it, that you will discontinue your operations?
Yeah, I would be extraordinarily disappointed if that was the case. If there is no legal authority to operate, I think that would make it very difficult.
I have a couple questions, and I meant to ask Ms. Steger this, but I understand from previous testimony that Uber is operating in some or maybe many of the 25 other cities that ring the city of Portland. Are you operating elsewhere in the state or in Southwest Washington at this point?
Waiting for you.
You want us to be first. Okay, so you're not operating
for you. We would love to be able to have the entire Portland region be one cohesive market. So absolutely, we are waiting for you.
Okay. And then my other question is, you aren't international, but you are national. You are operating in a number of other cities. How does this proposal in front of us in terms of the level of regulation compare to what you're experienced with elsewhere? And are there any other sort of nuances or concerns that you have with the approach that we're taking? Obviously, you're willing to go along with it.
Right. Yes,
but
absolutely.
How does it compare, you know, against other cities? And have we, are there some things we should learn from them, in your opinion, as an operator that we haven't learned yet?
Yeah, absolutely. I think to be totally frank, there are better and there are worse. And in the markets where there have been worse regulations, I mean overly burdensome ones that basically undermine the entire rideshare model, we have left those markets. But there are also markets where I think that the rules were much more, understood our existing model and kept with it. I think that Portland right now is trying to strike a balance between looking at the interests of its residents and, you know, interests of existing companies. So I think there is some room to tweak, but I think that, you know, one of the things I think is really interesting about Portland is the request for data. I think that that really goes to show that Portland is trying to see how technology can help advance transportation planning. I do think that, you know, to be frank, some of the existing, market participants should want to be able to do that as well. I think that gives the city a bigger and clearer picture, and I think that the imposition on TNCs to do wait times should also be, you know, looked at more broadly across the industry.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions?
So will will Lyft require the drivers to give you their business license number before you allow them on the platform?
Yeah, so I'd love to address that. Just today, we actually sent out a text to all of our driver applicants to get them to sign up for the business license.
Thank you. And is it possible for a female passenger to request a female driver?
Not at this time, but I will note that there is an interesting thing about way the platform works, right? Because you have the photo. I have heard of, certain women deciding that if it's late at night that they'd rather have a female driver come pick them up. They will decline the match that they've received. So it's possible.
Well, with technology being what it is, that might be something to offer.
Yeah. Well, and actually, that brings a really interesting point. Lyft actually was based on the idea. Our co-founders basically wanted to be a women-based company and only wanted to serve women, but their investors said, that doesn't make sense to cut your client base right in half. So
you're actually cutting your client base in maybe not in half, but certainly there's a great percentage of women who wouldn't ride with a stranger.
Yeah, I think that's actually changing. And the reason why I say that is 65% of our passengers are women.
Thanks.
So,
go ahead, please. Sir?
Yeah. I just want to follow up on the question Commissioner Fritz asked you. You said you sent out something to your drivers,
right,
urging them to get a business license.
Yes, absolutely.
But you didn't say you're going to be dropped from the platform if you don't.
Yeah, so I think we're right now currently working towards getting that as close as possible. It's a pretty smooth process. As I've looked at how it works, it's about 5 minutes. We definitely aspire to have every single person get a business license in the next few days.
So you wouldn't be opposed if we made that a requirement of this temporary program?
The
driver must provide a business license to the TNC.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So when we've basically seen the proposal and we agree with the proposal.
Well, what I'm suggesting is a little different from that proposal, though. No, I'm saying that, at least my understanding of the proposal is that business license will be provided to us, the city, if the driver reveals that.
So
and then we can also enforce it against the driver if we happen to pull over a driver and say, show us your business license, and you don't have one. But
yes,
I don't think our requirements, correct me if I'm wrong, say that any driver must provide you a business license number prior to them being accepted onto your platform.
So my understanding is, to be totally clear, that we are requiring everyone to get their business license during the application phase right now.
Requiring?
Yes, we are requiring that.
So they would be dropped as a Lyft driver if they don't have
a business license. Activated.
Activated. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Thanks very much. Okay, let's turn to individual testimony. Thanks, Ms. Chang.
Okay. The first three are Wynn Dwyer, John Orr, and Jeanette Thiebert, and they'll be followed by Ashton Root, Cynthia Smith, and Dan Payton.
We're going to go 1 minute.
Oh. And again, folks, I know this is going to be hard because we have a lot of folks here that want to speak, so we're going to ask you to confine your remarks to 1 minute. And I know that's hard to do, but try to be really focused. Thank you.
I've done a lot of preparation. I'd like to
respectfully ask that we were just told this.
No, but you both got to speak at the last hearing, and we've got literally 80 people signed up that want to speak tonight. So can you just try to confine yourself to a
minute? I'll try my very hardest.
We'll try.
Hi there, I'm Wendy Dyer, and thank you for the opportunity to speak, especially after my outburst last time. I apologize for that, and thank you for letting me be here. That outburst was precipitated by some misinformation that was shared, and I'd like to talk about that, just one point of that. This $6.22 thing, it's BS. I got to be frank with you. I was homeless, living in a car for 9 months due to no fault of my own, before I became a cab driver. Within 2 months, I had a two-bedroom apartment with hardwoods and big windows that was pet-friendly. And I currently bring in $35 to $45 an hour after expenses. I also lease my car out to individuals who are also formerly homeless now, thanks to the taxi industry. So this industry has literally saved my lives and the lives of others. And I'm very much looking forward to buying another vehicle and continuing to sponsor other formerly homeless individuals into this industry. I will not be able to do that if I become homeless again. We've seen in San Francisco that since Uber reached saturation, taxi drivers have seen a decrease in 35 to 80% in their fares, yet those drivers for the taxi companies are still making 30 to 60% more than Uber drivers because Uber cuts its prices to push out the competition, which puts its drivers at an economic disadvantage. Drivers are protesting around the company and around the world based on the employment practices or not employment practices of this company. And I encourage you to please learn from these other jurisdictions. Learn from the lives of your Portland cab drivers who are most certainly making a lot more than $6.22 an hour.
Okay, thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. You know, I think the issue of insurance...
Put your name in the record again.
Oh, please. Sorry. My name's John Orr, driver, proud driver for Radio Cab. I also make just a little more than $6.30 an hour. So, you know, the track record, I want to just stress the importance of insurance because the track record of Uber is terrible. An Uber driver struck and killed a six-year-old girl in I think it was San Francisco, Sophia Liu. And when they were sued over that, they denied liability. And it was during the period where this period one that we talk about so much, while the driver was driving illegally and using his cell phone, which is against California law, which I believe is against Oregon law, and which is a necessity, there's not enough parking spots downtown and in the Pearl to have 1,000 Uber cars here on a Friday or Saturday night without drivers driving around the busy areas looking for rides. They're going to need to hit a button on their touchscreen, okay, to accept a ride. So that in itself is inherently illegal to operate effectively as an Uber or Lyft driver in this town until they have a physical piece of mounted hardware with a button that you can do without having to look at a phone, find the place on your touchscreen to hit, and use a cell phone, a portable electronic device. Real quick, spoke with Dan of Propel Insurance. The second question asked by insurance companies now when they have a claim is, do you work for a TNC? Because that excludes you from coverage. Now, situations could arise. I just found two instances where one where a customer was robbed at gunpoint and another where a woman was raped by people posing as Uber drivers or people driving under someone else's Uber account. So in the case of somebody driving under someone else's Uber account, This is by the lack of oversight, as Mr. Kafouri discussed, I think it was, or maybe Darren also. But the lack of Ms. Amico, but the lack of on-site management, okay? Regardless, we said the lack of on-site management means that you could have people